Minnesota Vikings fans, welcome back to the Purple People Eaters podcast. He's Aaron, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss, if that's what you want to call it, maybe just get stuff off our chest, the beyond debacle, the horrendous display of offense of, I'm almost speechless. I can talk until the cows come home, but golly, even I'm like, I don't know. And it started from the very first drive. It was comical. It was comical in a non-comical way where it hurts. The fact that they even had a chance to win this game in the end does, you know, show something about this team. But man, what an ugly start to the freaking season. Whole lot of penalties to talk about. Like I said, we did manage to get back, you know, in this game. Somehow, some way, we did get some bright spots from Osborne, and we got to see Pierce. No rust on Pierce, apparently. We talked about the feast or famine Breland, and he lived up to that billing, no doubt about it. But yeah, some of the stats we're going to read about the false starts and the penalties, it's, like I said, it's comical. But we will get into recapping. We got a lot of talkers on this one, no doubt about it. So we'll recap this Bengals loss in OT. The Vikings go down week one. Luckily for the Vikes, the whole division got beat, and some of them got beat real, real bad, whereas it seemed like we more beat ourselves. And then obviously we'll preview next week, Arizona, another road game. When you look at the spread though, you go, huh, it seems like Las Vegas is a bigger Viking believer than a lot of our media and fan base. Of course, coming off such a horrible display, what can you expect? But there was some positives. Like I said, the third wide receiver, we got a different look on defense. We're going to discuss it all in just a little bit. We'll talk a little bit of Gopher football at the end. If you've heard the show, you know we do that near the end or at the end. Luckily, my co-host saved it last week. We almost didn't. But yeah, we're going to recap, talk it through, because a lot of us just need to get stuff off our chest and talk it through. Take a couple deep breaths, maybe 100 of them. Forget the 10 count. We need to maybe take 100. And then preview that Cardinal game coming up. Big game, because Cincinnati's one where you look at it and you thought, that would be the one we'd win probably. We'll see. You know, sometimes you start out kind of funky overall when you look across the league. There were a lot of underdog upsets and whatnot. But if this is your first time listening to this year Vikings podcast, welcome. It's available in a variety of places. You can find it under the Ropadope Radio podcast right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropadope radio. You don't need to go to blogtalk and Ropadope though and download the show there or listen to the browser. You can find the Ropadope Radio podcast on Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn. In a variety of places, right? We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network, which can be found in a lot of places. Why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com? Of course, late last year in the season, Aaron, my co-host, started a Spricker page. So this is Vikes, Timberwolves, Gophers, and some podcasts from him, if you're into that. It's called Living in Loserville. Like I said, it's on Spricker. Sometimes, like last week, the show is actually available there first. So it's Living in Loserville, Spricker. And boy, does that really match up with week one. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called DirecTV Stream. Used to be AT&T, but you know, this is how it goes. DirecTV Stream. Prices start at the same price, $69.99 a month. The best of live TV and on demand. All your apps placed with access to over 7,000 apps. Of course, no annual contract, no hidden fees. If you upgrade to the Choice or Ultimate, couple of things: 3 months free of HBO Max, plus you enjoy regional sports network with no additional fee. The last few years, some cable companies have gotten real funky. I know here in Minnesota, we've had an issue watching some of our sports. If you go to the Premier package, it's HBO Max and Showtime already included. That's DirecTV Stream. All right, let's bring in my co-host Aaron and kind of check his temperature, seeing how he's doing. It's been over 24 hours since the debacle. I guess we can just look at it like, hey, it's a 16-game season. The 17-game season didn't even account.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe call it a mulligan for the division. But before we get started, I got to go back and do a make good here. I was scrolling through Instagram this week, and I happened to catch the reverse angle of the Mohamed Ibrahim hit, which I talked about last week. And I had only seen from one side of the field. Maybe I think it was probably the right side of the field. They showed it from the other side in slow motion, and I was way off. So I want to just tell the listeners that I obviously didn't see what I thought I saw, and the Ohio State Buckeyes for any kind of aspersions I might have put on them. I saw it from the other side, and you're right. There wasn't a tug. It was just Mo's legs and so on. So I wanted to get that out of the way at the top of the show. Now, let's get to we want to start it off, man. I mean, I think I wrote my first game notes. My first notes in my game log is just, you know, three false starts and a holding. Now, I forgot who the holding was at first. I think it was Hill. I'm not sure. But nonetheless, we, you know, there was holding calls all around in this game. So what an auspicious start. I can't say as I've seen anything quite like it.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, in the first half, there was something like 12 or 13 actually called penalties, only 10 accepted, luckily, for 91 yards in the first half. Well into the third quarter, we were averaging third and 20. This just in, that's not good. 8 of them on the offensive line out of the total 12. Overall, though, 12-3 was the difference there. 17 flags, like I said, only 12 accepted. And Ham, back-to-back false starts or two false starts early. It was, it was bad. It was ugly as it gets. And then we also got a different look. Some 3-4 action that they've been talking about a little bit. The defense looked good early. The Bengals were getting all sorts of pressure, no doubt about it. We did get on the scoreboard with a nice, I think it was from like the inside the 10. Yeah, it was a 91-yard drive, 14 play. Thielen got, you know, I think we still had two penalties on that drive, by the way. Osborne had that crazy third and 24 where there was a missed tackle, then he jumped to go get it. Cook had a nice third down make you miss type catch and run play. But 7-0, you're like, okay, it was ugly, but it's still 7-0. And then since he answered,
yeah, that was kind of an okay calm down touchdown where I was like, okay, it's not all falling apart. We've actually got the lead here. And you know, third and 24 convert, like you said, to Osborne. And then, again, there's just penalties that were creeping in, and you wouldn't be in third and 24 if there wasn't for penalties. I don't think you're going to see Cook go that far backwards. And it just seemed like, okay, bad start. Maybe we can, you know, make hay now, you know, while the getting's good. And nice touchdown by Thielen, by the way, a crossing route where he just kind of goes in. It was a nice play.
Mr. Red Zone, the last, 17 games or something. He doesn't do much as far as the long ones. Of course, he got a nice one now that I think about it. But man, he's really becoming a threat in the red zone, something he wasn't earlier. But since he, like I said, answered, and you know, the two drives to close for the Vikings, three penalties on both, you know, on two drives. And the killer, Aaron, was okay, they tied it up, no big deal. But then that deep ball to Chase, 14-7. And then that we know that they get the ball first. That half, I really – what were your feelings that half? I was just kind of like, oh, man, we were playing good, and now we give up a deep ball.
I was ready to cut Breshad Breeland at that point. I mean, he had the PI penalty. I think it was his fault on the Higgins touchdown where he didn't follow Higgins across.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, and then his head was low, and then all of a sudden the bomb to Chase – which Chase just ran by him. I don't know if there's many guys who can hang with Chase. Kind of same thing that Tyreek Hill did to him, just kind of breezed right by him. So I'm hearing a lot about technique and this and that and the day after and Monday morning quarterback stuff. But I think he just got straight up beat. And at this point, I'm like, well, who is this guy? Where did we get him? Can we send him back? And then Mike Hughes goes ahead and gets a game-winning interception, but we won't get into that. That's a whole nother story. We traded the, you know, Hughes to the Chiefs, and we get Breland, but not in the same deal, so it's not really relatable. But yeah, I was ready to get rid of Breland at that point, but he went ahead and redeemed himself in the second half.
Yeah, he definitely lived up to that feast or famine. He is going to be one of those players that, you know, it's going to be back and forth. We definitely didn't hear Pat P name. I think he gave up 2 catches for 22 yards, so that was good. Another key thing here in the second half, though, opening drive, they're marching down. It's 3rd and 6, and Alexander drops a fairly easy interception. He let it get to his body. I think it ricocheted off his helmet, too, went right into a Bengals receiver or maybe a tight end. And next thing you know, it's like 4th and short. And those little plays, like even, you know, obviously a pick, there's no scoring. But even if it just goes to the ground, he dropped the ball, no big deal. Maybe you put your hands out a little bit more so the ball drops instead of bounces. And, you know, you're forcing a field goal. And next thing you know, that's 4 less points. You start to add that up, you know, for a second there, we had 21 points. That would have been 21-20. So that really changed it. And then, you know, Udo? Yeah, Udo, the guard, that penalty, that roughing penalty was like, what the F? And it made it, you know, 2nd and 26. Luckily, the Bengals were doing some Bengals stuff, and they went for it on that 4th down.
And usually you like the Vikings in those 4th down short yardage situations defensively. They usually come up pretty well. Even goal line stuff, they do pretty well when, you know, Mike's got the guys that he likes. So I'm not so worried about the 4th and, you know, getting that situation, but you got to, you know, you got to make the stop. And I think Udo was just trying to protect whoever was getting thumped on a little bit, and made a terrible decision and got himself a penalty. But, you know, just add that to the list of penalties that just kind of happened all day. And, you know, the interception, or the possible interception, I guess you could say. You chalk that up to week 1, but, you know, Mac's never been a sure-handed guy. That's why he's a defensive back. So, but, you know, the luck to have it bounce into the receiver's hand is something that, you know, I'd say I'd never seen, but we saw it last year in, like, game 1 or game 2 where it just ricocheted off Boyd and into the hands of the receiver in the end zone. So, luckily, it wasn't that bad. But, you know, it was a calamity of a lot of different errors. Just going on here offensively, and defensive's got to gel together. But, you know, defense holds up again, you know, inside the 10 coming to the end of the game. And you just don't know. I see good signs with the defense. I just don't think they're there yet.
Yeah, definitely. And we did talk about how they're going to need a little time, and especially doing something we weren't for sure. We thought about in the offseason. But we thought about that last offseason and potentially the offseason before that, Zimmer tweaking his, you know, his system and adding a little 3-4 pizzazz to it for that run pass option stuff. And go figure, Barr misses the game. We finally do a 3-4 at times, and Barr misses the game. So, you know, they got a field goal after that 4th and 4. Play that, you know, in the Thielen touchdown and whatnot. It's, you know, 53-yarder, by the way. That was a nice kick from them. We did pretty good in that category, too. Down 10, though, 14 minutes left. You're like, okay, normally under Zimmer in general, we actually did this last year a bunch. You know, how many times do we even come back? I think we did that in 2019 a little bit, too. Once you're down 10 in this team, it usually is pretty much over. That wasn't the case here. We could say, you know, we'll talk about the Cook stuff late in the game, but Jefferson got completely screwed out of that touchdown. It did make it 24-20. Cook ended up getting, I think, a sweep to get in there. 9 minutes left, 24-21. Defense holds. It's like, okay, here we go. We get a penalty, 2nd and 20, and then a sack. And it's like, okay, I guess we're done. You know, it really felt like, yeah, we're close, but we're pretty much screwed now. It really felt that way. I got to admit it.
It looked like a continuation of what we've seen throughout the years in high-pressure situations for this offense. And you're right. I was like, okay, threw my hands up. That's it. I mean, you get the penalty, you get the sack, and you find yourself in a situation that is very difficult to get out of. And defense comes on the field and forces a punt. Great punt, by the way.
That was a bright side. We got to look.
It was a bright side. One of the better punts I've seen a Viking kicker make. And so that now you're still tied. It's 148. We're down by three. We get the ball back with a minute 48, no timeouts. And you get a good catch from Conklin. End of the fourth and four. Osborne goes ahead and converts that. And then I don't want to talk about it. I think I sent you a text. Something went through the uprights in a way that seemed very confident, and there was no doubt about it, and that was nice to see, but I have a hard time talking about it. I'm a superstitious guy.
Cut to the chase, and Chase did chase us out of that field, but cut to the chase. Was it a tie goes to the runner thing? Both angles were tough. It was blocked. One angle looked like Cook's butt was down. Then it came. The other one looked like, man, that ball was loose. Was it a tie goes to the home team?
I had the sinking feeling. I knew as soon as they signaled Bengals ball, I just knew that it's going to be hard to overturn that. So I had the hope that it would be that would go our way, but I kind of knew, and I think everybody knew in the pit of their stomach, that it was going to not be overturned. And I think it sucks because I think Cook thought that he was down too. He might have released the ball thinking, well, my butt's down. I feel my butt on the ground. I might release it. But like you mentioned earlier, there's really no good angle that didn't have an arm in the way. And that's kind of, you know, how it went down. But, you know, we didn't deserve to win the game. So I get it's poetic justice that happened. But we were right on the doorstep.
That's very well put. You know, we didn't deserve to win the game. There's just no way around it. Could we, coulda, shoulda, woulda. I mean, this is Vikings. So we know all that routine. In the end, didn't get the job done. Before we pile on, you know, with the old line more, there was some positivity here. Now, what'd you think of the 3-4-ish looks from time to time? Not just going to 3-4 straight up. You know, I did think the late, you know, that deep ball hurt. We talked about that. Some linebackers missed some tackles. We talked a little bit about missed tackles, but not a whole lot. That happens the first game or two. No matter how much people played or didn't play in the preseason, overall players aren't playing as much as they did. So tackling is a little rough usually in the NFL early in the season. So I'm not totally worried about that. I do think the run defense kind of wore down. What'd you think of that 3-4-ish look, though? Talk a little bit about that. Because, man, Barr will make a difference, and then the question mark is Hunter and how he's going to perform in this.
Yeah, I mean, I get the impression that we didn't see a lot of the starters both offensively and defensively because of the new wrinkles that were coming in. Maybe they wanted to be a little bit more of a surprise, and I think they did surprise the Bengals with it a little bit. But, you know, defensively, the 3-4 kind of set the edge a little better. And I think that worked in the first half, but then Zimmer kind of reverted back to Zimmer ways in the second half, and they were getting mixing out on the edge and getting some yardage there. But I like it. I don't want to, you know, Daniil does what Daniil does. And if you cannot mess with that too much, I think I'd be a little bit more comfortable. But I think he's capable of playing that 3-4 outside linebacker. I thought Vigil played well for what he was asked to do. Barr would be an improvement, a healthy Barr. Would be an improvement on that possibly just because height and length would probably help a lot there. But I like the idea that they're trying new stuff. I think with some of the new arrivals in the division, like Justin Fields and running quarterbacks that we've had troubles with, that's a look that would probably be a little more advantageous in those situations. Obviously you're not going to play it all game, but now you got the bodies with Tomlinson and Pierce to successfully run something like that. And I'm for it as long as, you know, they can continue to tune it up and, you know when to use it and when not to use it. Like I said, I'm really bullish on this defense. I think given another week or so to gel and get it together, you've got the athletes, you've got the parts, you've got the scheme. Now it just kind of all has to gel together. And, you know, that could be a bright spot for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and like you said, the bodies in the middle, along with Sheldon, we even saw Griff being able to do something. You know, he did his best ole with something that he did in 2019 so many times. He could have had at least one sack, if not two, or at least a hit on the quarterback. But he was just trying to go for the highlight reel, I guess. Up high, one-handed, just like, come on, dude, stop ole-ing. But Pierce, you think there'd be some sort of rust, but when you're a big man and the goal is to take space and push people back, I guess there's not a whole lot of rust when it comes to that. He's a monster. He had 3.5 career sacks, had two. His tummy was full. You see, he was hungry when he got that one. Pierce lived up to the billing. Even when I watched him in the Broncos camp, I told you, we talked about that. I think I texted you that. Like, dude, this dude will go to the sideline. He's as advertised. And just knowing we got a big daddy in the middle like that makes me feel real happy on the defensive end.
I feel good about it too. One of his sacks, they just let him through, but the other one, you know, he just kind of discarded the center and found his way to the quarterback. And he seems like when he gets to the quarterback, he gets the quarterback down, which is important, as you were talking about Griffin earlier. And I think that presence inside, once they figure out what they actually have and are able to scheme and maybe move Pierce around a little bit, you know, maybe switch sides with Delvin or do some things that they can do defensive line wise with him, like, this will evolve. And that's kind of what I said earlier, is like, this is going to evolve when different parts are going to have different roles. And I mean, I thought Harrison played well. I thought, you know, the guys that usually play well, play well. And, you know, even Alexander played pretty well, barely noticed him and didn't see, you know, anything about Pat P, but Pierce and Tomlinson, like, quiet, kind of like Linval. I think he just sort of did what he was supposed to do, kind of an unsung hero type of guy. I didn't hear any negatives about him. His name didn't flash. I think he's just there to take up space and free the linebackers. And I think he did exactly that. Wanham, didn't hear much about him as well. Probably could have played a little bit better, but I wasn't really focused on that. I was kind of seeing how the linebackers were going to play. And I thought, you know, as a whole, the defense could have played better in their parts. But like I said, that's going to progress, and I think it's going to be a pretty staunch defense, which it's going to need to be.
Yeah, and, you know, the whole mentality of being right in the game, maybe a point up, maybe a touchdown up, whatever, that plays into it as well. And so that, you know, speaking of, we'll kind of go on to the offense. We'll save the offensive line a little bit, some funky stuff there to talk about. But a lot of people talked about, one, we didn't try to establish the run enough. And two, the deep shots, right? And, you know, the play action is our bread and butter. We only used it 15% of the time. Now, of course, for 20 offensive snaps, we had 11 plus yards to go.
That's it.
Right. I mean, when you're first and 20, second and 20, I get this second and 20 run. I'd rather go 5 or 8 yards and just throw something quick to Cook. And I like that we use Cook. They were clearly trying to stop the run at the beginning and throughout the game once they got the lead. So I liked how we gave the ball to Cook in space, and some of that paid off. But did it just come down to, hey, dude, can you really look too much into play calling when you're in that scenario?
No, you can't. And, you know, I was very critical of Kubiak last week. I'm feeling a little bit better now. I know we didn't have the right, you know, circumstances, 3rd and 24s, 3rd and 21s, 2nd and 20s. These are not advantageous, you know, down and distance. This is, you know, try to find something that'll work. And obviously you can't run the ball in that situation, or it's not, at least doesn't benefit you as much to run the ball in those situations. And therefore, if you're not running the ball, your play action's not going to be the same, and it all kind of comes together in a big cluster. So, you know, when they got in rhythm, I thought that it was pretty good. A lot of short passes. I didn't like that so much. Didn't take any shots. Jefferson kind of seemed non-existent at times, but I think he might've been getting some shade from the defense. And so, you know, Thielen's going to be there. You have Osborne now, who played really well. We saw the 3 and 4 wides, which really shocked. The 3 wouldn't have shocked me so much, but to see the 4 wides and as often as we did, to me, that was a little bit, you know, that took me back a little bit. And I was like, okay, well, this is interesting. But I think that was because also you're looking at 3rd and 26, right. You're looking at 2nd and 21, down. And you're down. So, I mean, I wouldn't judge the play calling. Let's see how we are, you know, when we're ahead of the sticks and, you know, maybe up by 7, then we can talk about play calling. But really, I mean, what can you say? I thought Kubiak did a pretty good job of trying to salvage some pretty terrible situations.
Yeah, and once we were able to move the ball without penalties, you know, to still put up 24 points is pretty impressive. Like I said, they were all upside the box early and often. And then once they got the lead, or once it was, you know, 2nd and 20, then it was deep zones. So then you're going to take a deep shot then, you know, that doesn't make any sense either. So, you know, I don't know. I think I'm okay with it. I think you said that pretty well. But if you don't count the penalties, or I'm sorry, I'll never say that. If you, that sounds like a Viking fan when you're like 10. Well, hold on now. Look at this though. But if you just don't, if you count fourth down, 30 times we had 11 plus yards, and that hurts everything.
Wow.
Zim actually talked about that too. That hurts every little thing, dude. Like protection, all that stuff. Like it's special teams. Like there's just so much that plays into it. And there's this stat here as we get to the offensive line. The Vikings faced 9 third downs of 10 or more, 6 of at least 15 yards, their most in a game since Pro Football Reference began compiling play-by-play data in 1994. So that's not good. We were talking about how week one was weird. There were 8 outright underdogs that won, first time since 1983 where there was actually 9. I suppose tonight still could change that stat technically. So another thing about the run game, maybe because we didn't have as many 2 tight end sets, you know, that probably played into it. You know, we didn't set the record, though. Oakland Raiders, we left that up to them, 23 charged penalties in 2016. So, you know, that's at least we didn't set the record that way. Everyone got a holding call except O'Neal, and he made up for it with something else. He actually had a pretty good game. I'm not going to pick on O'Neal, but back to this offensive line. Adam Patrick tweeted this, and he said, really surprised a converted left tackle to right guard who switched to left guard, an O tackle that switched to right guard in a career backup OT performed poorly for the Vikes yesterday, huh? That's a screenshot right there.
Yep, that is, and that's the truth, and that's the sad part about it is, wow, you know, Udo, you got 2 tackles playing guards. You've got.
Well, they're bigger though. They're big.
Yeah,
guys,
they're bigger, though, sure. Right? You've got a really undersized center who's getting forklifted back to the quarterback.
That's perfect, dude. Not even bulldozed. He does get vert. You're right. It is a forklift.
At least his body's still in the way. I mean, that's a good thing. Cleveland had a miserable game, which none of us really expected. We thought he'd hold his own, mm-hmm. but he just got wrecked yesterday, and I'm sure that didn't help Hill at all. And, you know, Hill didn't have the greatest game. I thought he cleaned it up in the second half a little bit, but, you know, he had some penalties in the beginning, and you're just like, oh, God, that's Rashad Hill. We know that guy. And then Cleveland on the inside of that, and then Bradbury, you know, it was kind of amazing that we got back in that game. With what we were dealing with, it's just a lot of like duct tape just getting us through. And like you said, just digging out of a hole and down in distance all day long. It's probably just a headache. But, you know, just to get back in that game and to put it into overtime, I mean, that's some grit. Now, I'm not going to say that was a gritty Viking performance, but I did see some things from Kirk, which I hadn't seen before, and maybe we'll get into that because I don't want to be too high on Kirk considering what might happen in the games to come. But I really thought I saw a different Kirk out there, and, yeah, slow down, let's pump the brakes. But just an attitude and body language, the things that I always talk about that I don't like about him, I kind of saw things that I liked there. I'm not going to go too far with it, but we'll see how that progresses. I just thought – that offensive line, that tweet, was that a tweet? I think that hits the nail right on the head, right on the head.
And some people, and you know, some people just are going to hate Cousins. Like we went to a kid with high school to high school with, cool guy. But his first thing was Cousins was unprepared for this. Well, yeah, dude, who's prepared for second and 20 and third and 28? It's my guy. Come on, dude. Like your first person out of your mouth is going to be Cousins and Zimmer. So we saw where his allegiance stands. You know, so that like some people were like, yeah, but dude, there was only three sacks. Hey, buddy, he got hit eight times. And another thing, you know, all those holding calls, those are sacks, dummy. Like, come on, dude. Like, you even saw a couple of them where you're like, oh, he would have got fucking plowed there. I'm glad that he held him, actually. But it took away a first down or whatever. But it all goes back to forget the tackle, because at least we did get Darisaw, okay? He's not in the lineup, as we know. But at least we got it. You know, Reef would have been – a lot of us wanted to keep Reef. You know, it is what it is. But guard-wise, veteran guard-wise, we talked about how why not let the new rook in the second-year Cleveland be left tackles and battle it out and see who we extend in the future. But when you're sitting there a month ago, right, with $13 million in cap room still, you can't tell me you can't go get a veteran guard. You just can't do it. It was there for the taking. It probably still is there for the taking, Aaron. It really probably is. We still got a little cap room, but obviously we've done other stuff. And it was nice to get O'Neal done. So he's the second highest paid right tackle. So that's cool. We got that out of the way. He's on, including this year, it's 6 years. So we got that taken care of. But it just like last year, we couldn't believe how we could move the ball. The last eight games of the year, we're like, holy shit, this offense plucking away. And that's why I kind of doubled up what you said. It was pretty amazing that we could actually finally move the ball. But this offensive line is going to be our downfall in any kind of playoff scenario for the most part. And we've seen it, you know, the last 3 years, you know, against a real deal defensive line. It's just going to be that thorn in the side, man.
Now here's the scary thought now. We all have these hopes that Darisaw is going to be back and Darisaw is meant to be the left tackle and all this stuff. But whoa, reverse. Darisaw was scouted and drafted by the same guys that drafted Bradbury, that drafted Khalil, that drafted Cleveland. Who's to say their judgment is any good considering what we've got for offensive linemen at this point? So everybody thinks Darisaw is going to be the savior. Well, hold on. Wait a minute. Can the guy play? We don't know. And now with the track record of them drafting offensive linemen, you just have no faith in the fact. Yes, we hope that he's going to be a first round offensive tackle
right
for the next 8 years. But judging from the track record of drafting offensive linemen here with the Vikings, that's not what it's telling me. And I think that's a terrifying thought because now you've got another guy. What, Darisaw is a better guard than a tackle next year? I mean, where are we here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and as far as even helping us this year, you know, to miss that much of camp, you know, that's tough for a big dude. That's really tough to get your body up to speed to where you can actually stay in the game the whole time and not just get wore down, not get beat. I mean, it's not even about – just the rust. It's just about preparing yourself for that 6 week camp in there. That, you know, the reps, that all that. It was going to be tough already to be a left tackle. That's why you get paid so much. It's tough already. But like I said, not long ago, you go check out our salary cap and there was $13 million chilling. And that's at least guard money. And it would be better to have Cleveland at tackle than Hill, right? But yep. Like you said, there's no savior opportunity. You know, per se, let's see how that works.
Well, even any Chris, if items, you would have, okay, so let's go back. This has been an ongoing, like, folding event, right? You had to put Cleveland in because your guards weren't sufficient last year. So you had to make him a guard. So let's say Samia turned out.
Too, mid-season.
Yeah. Let's say Samia turned out to be a suitable guard, right? Then you'd still have depth at left tackle with Ezra, and Ezra would have a year more experience at left tackle. So that way, when you lose Reef or you move on from Reef, you can plug in a guy that's already had a year in your system into left tackle. But instead of doing that, we decided to make him a guard out of necessity. And now all of a sudden we have nothing at left tackle. So we draft Darrisaw and he's not ready to play. So now you're at nothing at left tackle. So you start moving parts. You take your swing left tackle, you put him at left tackle, and now you've got four tackles and a center as your offensive line. Now, it could work out. It's the zone running and all that stuff. I get it. And I know it's game one and they need to gel and all this stuff. But like I said, your Bradbury's not I think we picked him at pick 12 or something in the first round. He's not a strength.
Still not going to be a strength in general, the whole line
overall. Udo seemed to play well next to O'Neal. You know O'Neal is the most competent offensive lineman that we have. Cleveland might improve, but you still got huge question marks at left tackle, which you used a first-round pick on. It's a mess, and let's say that we move on to next season. There's a new coach, possibly, a new GM, possibly. I mean, how do you evaluate? Where do you start fixing this offensive line? Question for another day, but
yeah,
definitely
I was gonna say, that's too long of a segment to get into right now because that's a detailed thing that we will no doubt do regardless in the offseason, whether the it's a good year or not. We're still going to have to address that as it seems. All right, so moving ahead here, Arizona looks the part of a young up-and-coming team, beating a quality team. It's first week, so you never really, it is what it is in the NFL. Sometimes with the first week, it's kind of like college football in September. You got to figure it out and see who's good. How many times have, I'm not talking about this Bills' current roster, but how many times did the Bills start 3-0, beat New England, be like, here we go, dude, and then they suck. So let's put it all in perspective here, but Arizona looked very good in week one. We definitely need Barr back to about as full strength as possible. Like I said, 38-13 over Tennessee, who's a run and play defense type team, is a damn good on the road. Even is a damn good win to start the season. No doubt about it. We did see them turning the corner to an extent. We'll see about the head coach. I'm not really sold on the head coach, but as far as a guy that knows offense, I'm definitely sold there. But here's the thing. So the over-under is 51, right? But Las Vegas is like the biggest Vikings believer because it's only – you get 3 points, 3.5 points in the NFL just being at home. So it's basically like a pick 'em type game. After that debacle, maybe they saw, hey, if you don't get 14 penalties, you might be decent. What's Vegas know that we don't know? Because they know some things there in the Sin City.
Maybe they're not sold on the Cardinals. I mean, I'm terrified of them at this point, but maybe they're home. I don't know, Chris. I don't know what Vegas is seeing. My guess is that they just think they'll come back down to earth. But what I'm seeing is a defensive end that got 5 sacks. I'm seeing the other defensive end named J.J. Watt. I'm seeing a quarterback that can run all day, and we don't do well with running quarterbacks, and this is probably the best running quarterback, scrambling quarterback in the league. Just pesters you all day with that stuff. You got to stay home with him, and even if you do, you got to manage to tackle him. He's shifty. You've got probably the best catching wide receiver coming our way in DeAndre Hopkins.
Oh, yeah.
And another great catch. You're looking at some talented players. And not only are they just talented, but they're talented in places that always seem to hurt us. And they're just built to beat us. I don't like this game. I think – I don't know what Vegas is seeing. Maybe the line will change a little bit. But I just don't see any way beating this team unless – everything we saw in week one was a mirage, but I don't think that's the case. I mean, I think we mentioned off the air that it's like a souped up Russell Wilson. Maybe he doesn't throw as well, but he runs as fast. He's as tricky as Russell is. And we've always had trouble just, keeping him from running the football. And this is going to be tough. The 3-4 is going to have to help out here because Barr, Murray is just going to
Dr. Barr.
Murray's just a nightmare for us. And do we have a corner that can keep with Hopkins? Maybe Pat Pete, but they know each other pretty well from last season. So make a pick here. I got to go Cardinals. And I think the Vikings will play well, but I still think they get beat by a couple of touchdowns. So I'm going to say something like 32-21, something like that. I don't think it's going to be as ugly. Offensively, I think we'll be able to score the ball, but I just think what Murray's just going to have a field day on us. And I just don't see us being able to stop either his run or his pass. We'll take one away, but which one that'll be, I have no idea, but I say Vikings lose this one, end up 0-2.
Yeah. I mean, we bring up Hopkins for obvious reasons, but they do have AJ Green and they have a young dude from Purdue, Moore, who's a baller as well. So our you know, secondary is going to be tested, no doubt about it. I'd push back on, I think Wilson is a better scrambler to make a throw with his arm. Don't get me wrong, the highlight reel stuff, Murray can just, you know, run way outside and then almost Fran Tarkington like, and then just chuck the damn ball so long. But he's got a lot more speed and he is more, it is kind of like if he blends it both, that's where he's really going. We cannot allow him to be able to pass and pass and pass. We got to definitely get that pressure on. I'm looking at a tad closer game. Oh, what? That's only 9 points, 32 or 11 points. Yeah, that's really not bad. According to ESPN's Football Power Index, which I usually use for college football as a joke, 63.7. So ESPN's on board. Vegas isn't. The over-under is set at 51, and I kind of feel like both teams are going to be in the 20s. So I'm going to say 27-24, the exact – no, I can't believe I just did that. I kind of just cornered myself there. But the exact same score to lose, which that's kind of – I'll say 23 just to throw it off. 27-23, Vikes go down 0-2, and I got to see how they look, but – I'm not feeling horrible about Seattle as much as some people may going into this. But, you know, another thing is some of these poor starts. We talked about how 2-2 after four would be great, considering we could get Barr back and possibly Darisaw in a couple of weeks. Who knows about that? But especially Barr, he seems like he's going to be the closest anyway. And also, you know, just getting used to it, like you said, with this gelling stuff. But, man, when you look at these starts, right, we're talking to a lot of people just assume we're going to have a slow start. You know, last year, 0-3, and, you know, we got to 1-5. Now, sure, we did make a nice run and somehow got 7 wins. But we started out rough. The year before that we had, you know, that we got to the second round, we were still 2-2. 2018, 2-2. Even that year we were 13-3 under Zimmer, 2-2 to start, and we only put up 7 points. We lost 14-7. I remember that game against Detroit. Our best start, even when we won the division in 2015 on the road in Green Bay, still started out 2-2. Our best start under Zimmer was 5-0, and then go figure our offensive line. Offensive tackles, we went through like 6 of them. And ended up being 8-8. So these slow starts under Zimmy is something to be like, man, we need to get off to a good start. But when you look at the schedule and losing, dropping this one, you know, it's 1-3. You know, you got to look at maybe we can put back-to-back wins and then get it back to 2-3 or something. But it's going to be tough to get 2-2.
Well, you hope so. You hope that it's like a building process, but there's no guarantee of that. And, look, I look at the opponents, Chris. I think it's what, Arizona, Seattle, and then who's the fourth one?
Cleveland at home.
Cleveland. See,
Seattle
that's
and Cleveland at home.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I like what you said about Seattle. I think we've played them enough to know them enough to be able to scheme them, and we've almost beat them, you know, moral victories, but we've almost beat them a couple of times in the last couple of years. So I think if we get a chance to win, it's probably there. Cleveland's tough, man. Nick Chubb and Baker Mayfield and that defense is that's tough. That's a tough one. Let's hope they have a bad day. So yeah, if you can go 2-2, that is a blessing. But I don't see it. I'm thinking you probably go 1-3 and then you go after that. But it's tough, man. I mean, and just not really a space in the schedule where you look at maybe besides the Lions games, and that's even up in the air, where you can really take a break here. This is a tough schedule this year. And we need to be, you know, getting better weekly. And from the low we had in week one, it wasn't everything wasn't terrible. There were bright spots, but they were few and far between and mixed in with a bunch of other stuff that, you know, they've got to get it going. Let's hope it was a wake-up call. And, you know, do you want to say bounce back? Well, I would, but the Cardinals, man, I mean, they're just good in places that we're not. And that's what bothers me about that game.
Yeah, and they're still trying to get over the hump to be a playoff team as well. So we'll see. We'll see. But anytime you're at home, you feel pretty good about yourself. You know what I mean? Especially with the crowds back, obviously. To close the show, we generally spend a little time on our Minnesota Gophers. The USC, not UFC. The USC coach got fired, so I am a little nervous here.
Yeah, a little bit.
First half, all right, man, here we go. We're going to do good. They kind of let – not kind of. They let their guard down in the third. All of a sudden, it's a close game. Next thing you know, the next possession, we run the ball, you know, off tackle. We're just running the shit out of the ball and making it look easy. Almost it was a funky game. We had some wide receiver drops. We had some poor quarterback play in the third quarter. They ended up getting it, you know, getting the win. But now, the third quarter was a bummer. Third quarter was like, really, dude, you're not this type of program yet where you can just separate yourself by showing up on the bus or at halftime all Gatorated up. Like, yeah, let's destroy this team. I didn't see that. And when you're a developing program still, look at that 2019. We were 11-2, but those first four games were all down to the wire. So, you know, maybe they were looking at Colorado ahead, thinking they already had this one. I don't know, but that sucked. That part sucked. But Potts looked damn good. I just don't necessarily want to give the guy 34 carries who has injury history either. Let's limit it to 27 and spread it around a little bit.
I agree. I liked what Potts did. And it was good to see him finally get into rhythm because he was always a spot player. He'd come in, you know, for a carry here, a carry there because he had some good backs in front of him. But I thought he played well enough that if you had to do 34 carries, I think you could live with it as long as, you know, he stays healthy and stuff. But they bring up the freshman Bucky Irvin. They seem to like him a lot. Cam Wiley is just not doing much for me. He just can't really seem to separate. Maybe he needs a position change at some point, but you know, give him a shot, see what's going on. And Bryce didn't really get many carries. I'm wondering about that. He's been with us for a long time. I feel like he probably deserves some of those carries now that Mo's out. But PJ said they're going to try a bunch of different guys, see if they can find one that sticks. And maybe the Irvin kid is one that can do that. Offensive line, I had some questions about. They should have dominated that game. From what we've been hearing about them, and they did not dominate that game. They weren't terrible, but there was no domination on the offensive line there. There was, and you think with the size we have with Falele and Dunlop and those guys that you should be able to really make some hay with the running game. And it just wasn't, it was good, but it wasn't great considering you're playing that kind of competition. I'm sure Miami of Ohio is a pretty good team in the MAC, but if you're a Big Ten squad and you should be able to road grade those guys. And then the back shoulder throws, Chris, that's the one question that you got to defend those. I don't know if they were thrown back shoulder or ended up back shoulder or however that happened, but just hit them again and again and again. If you don't clean that up, every team's going to do that to you. So you got to be aware of that, but they needed the win. If they would have lost that one, it's the lights out, but, you know, a win is a win, I guess, is what I'll say to that. And, you know, got to get better production out of the running game. Defensively, linebackers are a little bit slow. Defensive line still not quite there, and we've got the bodies, so I'm not sure how they're going to do that. PJ said he's going to probably cut the rotation down a little bit, maybe a couple less guys on the rotation, try to get some consistency there. But as far as winning that game, I was – was happy that they won it. And now we're talking about Colorado going forward. And, you know, one thing I didn't think about was the altitude there, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. I guess it always is when you, you know, go to Colorado in any sport. But, you know, I think they just ran the ball too much. And so it kind of killed the per average. Because they're just like, let's just grind this out. I mean, when you got a guy that has 170 yards, I can't really say I'm disappointed. But in the same breath, I think they overran. It was like, okay, dude. But, you know, at times, it's funny because Fleck will be like, Mr. I'm going for it, but also Mr. Conservative all in one game, as we saw. You look at the first 2 weeks, right? Heading into Colorado, though, they just – now, Texas A&M lost their quarterback in the first quarter. But they went neck and neck with them, and they had a decent season last year. You know, they're trying to turn the corner. They had, I think it was 2017 or 16, where they had a really good year, and they got some recruits in, kind of, you know, middling since then. But this is going to be a tough game. Anytime you're on the road, it's tough. Something of what you said with the altitude, that plays into it. But football is a 4 or 5 second, you know, type thing. There's a lot of stops and starts, so it doesn't, you know, late enough in the fourth quarter in a close game, I think that's where it gets you. But it does sound like, thank goodness, right, the new wide receiver from A&M is gonna be okay. Daniel Jackson, we gotta still see him develop, and it sounds like, knock on wood, Autumn Bell is gonna be back. And I think that's also why we haven't opened up as much offense as we wanted to, because our number one guy's not there. So if we can have those three back, Spam Ford made a couple of good plays. We're going to need the tight end. I just want to see a little bit more versatility. But this is going to be a tough game, dude. And it opened at a plus one for the Gophers. And that didn't open long ago. And they're already minus two. Now, like I said, it's 3 points, pretty solid in college. But to open up, you know, as the favorite and already be down 3 points a day later or something like that, that tells you Vegas wasn't impressed with our Miami, Ohio third quarter performance and was really impressed with Colorado against A&M last week.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I got to say that it probably has something to do with the defense. I'm not loving the defense. I think we've got the players. Scheme's bothering me. Now, I know Coach Rossi, you know, took over the job for another guy that didn't do very well. But, you know, throughout the seasons, I believe it's been a season, about a season and a half now with him. I don't want to say outrightly that I don't think he's getting the best out of those guys, but scheme wise, I've got an issue with it. Everything else seems to be improving, but the defense is still giving up big plays, still giving up runs that it shouldn't be giving up. Now, not the runs it was giving up before, like the, you know, 350 yarders to Maryland and so on, but
right. You're still giving up. Secondary's actually playing better than I thought, which is
yeah. Newbin's playing well at the safety. And you're not seeing guys that you thought you would see, like Josh Ani. I don't know if he's hurt and stuff like that, but I'm a little underwhelmed with the defense, and maybe that's what Vegas is seeing. And we're going to probably see against Colorado how that works out, but that's something I'll keep an eye on for the rest of the season. But, you know, I want to see him go down to Colorado and win. I think they do. Why is a tough question. I think Colorado's a really good squad. But I think it's going to be a lot of what you said earlier is just control the clock, run the football. And I think we can do that successfully. I think it'll be a low-scoring game, unless we score a lot of running touchdowns. But I think that's basically what they're going to try to do is eat the clock, run the ball, Jerry Kill style, and go and beat Colorado. So I'd say give me a score like, you know, 24-13, 24-17, something like that. Gophers get a win. I don't think it'll be easy, but I think it'll be a grinded-out ball game.
Yeah, and, you know, they did do a really good job of stopping the run against A&M. Not that they're known just to run it up people's, you know, noses, but, you know, they're a good team. They're a good team overall. They're well coached and whatnot. And knock on wood, just Minnesota kickers in general, but it does appear that we have a kicker, which plays into our style of play more. But just the fact that if I'm going to trust Fleck here, it sounded like Autumn Bell's coming back. So if he's back, I agree. I think we're going to win. I wouldn't be surprised at overtime, but I think a late field goal, something like that, like 26-23, just to make a weird score. Yeah, I think they're going to sneak it out, but this is where I really want to take a look at them. We mentioned that last week, too. Like, hey, let's look at the Colorado, at Purdue. Then we can get more info, more data. But I'll tell you, these first maybe 4 to 6 weeks of defense, almost every season, I won't say it in 2019 per se, even though they did continue to get better that year, but you're right about the scheme, about the coordinator, whatever. It takes us too long to be good. And it's like, well, hey, why not start out the gates? I'm not talking about Ohio State, but this would be the time to, you know, they didn't move the ball much at all either. They got a touchdown and then that was about it. So they ended up losing the game. They should have won. Would have been a major upset, though. I think it was 17-point spread. And I looked at that spread all week long, and I didn't bite on it, and I really should have. I wanted to say Colorado could sneak under that 17, and they sure did. They almost pulled the upset. So I'm going to say we're going to pull it off, but I'm real in between on this one. Any last words, sir, before we shut it down?
Well, I think it's a season maker-breaker here, and it's – you win this game, it propels you forward. You lose this game, is it the end of the world? No, but it is definitely some weight on your back that you shouldn't have. And it'll be a cool game to watch because that's probably my favorite college football stadium in Boulder. So, you know, I got it going for the Gophers. Let's hope they can win this one. But like you said, it's not going to be easy at all.
All right, go Vikes, go Gophers. We'll be back next week. Peace.